adaptation.
Dr. Dale Morris, he's from the headquarters of the Food Safety Office, formerly of New York.
So thanks, Dennis. It's my pleasure to be here and know that I'm the last obstacle between you and an early lunch. But now that I have extra time from the others, I can prolong the discussion. First, I just want to say what a turnout for this session. And I was looking at the program, and it's remarkably impressive. There was a full-day workshop yesterday. There's 7 breakout sessions for food-related topics. There's 4 roundtables. There's a lightning round session. And then there's numerous posters. So just shows that the cadre of people working on food safety and CSD is well served. When I returned to CDC 6 years ago, after 30 years in New York State Department of Health, I came to a food-borne illness and outbreak response surveillance program that had funding of $25 million to serve the nation. At the same time, I learned that the Atlanta Falcons were building a new stadium for $1.4 billion for 8 home games a year. So that is a challenge in perspective. But fortunately, the Food Safety Modernization Act, as Elizabeth had mentioned, had just passed. There was bipartisan support. There was even authorization language for $24 million. So hope sprung eternal. And the thought was that Charlie Brown would finally get to kick the football. However, unfortunately, as Charlie Brown got out again to try to kick the football the next year, once again, Congress, in the form of Lucy, pulled back the potential appropriation. The same thing happened in fiscal year 12 and 13, and 13 was a particularly hard landing because not only was there no appropriation, there was a 5% decrease through a sequestration. So despite that, Charlie Brown maintained his optimism, and in the spring of 2014 went out again, and miraculously he got to kick the football down the field. It didn't go very far. It was like a squib kick or an offside kick. There wasn't a lot of force or funding behind it, but there was actually $7.5 million that surfaced. And this, actually the same thing miraculously happened the next 3 years, 15, 16, and 17, so that after approaching actually $21 million of funding, which is getting close to the original authorization if you don't figure in the cost of living. So what has this done and what has this meant? So in terms of CDC made a commitment in the justifications to have half of the new money going out to the states. But in my time at CDC, I discovered that actually CDC was putting additional money out to states for food beyond what the Food Safety Office had available. So if you're adding and totaling that all together, the end of last year, there was actually approximately $45 million now that goes out to states through various food-related programs funded by multiple different groups. So, for example, $5 million went out through FoodNet, $32 million went out from the ELC grant. How many of you had to work recently on the ELC grant application? Yes, that's lots of fun. How many people at CDC are now having fun working on your evaluations of those submissions? But $32 million has gone out, and there's been a new influx of funding through antimicrobial resistance funding to help prepare for whole genome sequencing to be able to use modern methods for antimicrobial resistance detection. So some of these programs fund all states, such as PulseNet and the NARMS, the shipping outbreak net mostly, but there's been expansion of a number of programs with this additional funding. Also been able to increase the funding to state and local partners, such as ASTO, CSTE, APHL, NACHO, NEHA, and C4. And NCH has contributed as well, approximately 1.5 to EHSNet program. And there's been additional funding for general capacity. Some of you may not know this, but that it is possible for states to use Prevent Block Preparedness and the Prevention Public Health Fund to supplement food safety activities. Just another figure that just shows the what's almost been a doubling of funding that's gone out to states with this influx of additional food safety money. And it shows the myriad of programs that have been benefited from this. The biggest increase most recently was animal cobra resistance. And as some of the programs have got increased funding, some of the other CDC-funded programs, most CDC programs have not got funding increases. Food safety was one of the few that have. So in the lean years, a number of programs help support CDC, such as the Emerging Infection Program. Because now that we've got some funding, some of those have withdrawn funding, but because of the AR-AMD supplements, it's still been able to almost double funding despite those reductions. But what you notice here also is that there's not one food safety program. There's multiple programs. Because of the lack of funding for several years, individual programs were established that didn't cover all states and in some ways had to set up their own IT systems and resources. So there is some siloing of the activities. As I mentioned, the food safety line has not been the only supporter. This shows some of the other programs that have supported antimicrobial resistance, emerging infections, Prevent Block, NCH, and on. And even some of our other federal partners have felt this is so important that FDA and FSIS, USDA, have also provided some contributions. So this shows, again, more detail, which I'm not going to go through in depth, of the types of programs, the number of sites, the average funding provided per site, and a lot of this is increased. Some of these are new programs, like the Centers of Excellence. The NARMS is new, except for they used to be 4,000 a state for shipping. Now it's up to 222,000. Some of these are expanding programs, like Food Corps, and the Outbreak Net Enhanced, and PulseNet values is a key number. If you look at those two, they're over 100,000 now on average. Basically, 4 years ago, the average is around 40 and 55,000. That's become a critical number because to hire a person with fringe and indirect charges and then supplies and other, it takes up to 80 to 100,000 at least to hire one person. So this has been a boon to states that have broken that threshold. They finally can have a full-time dedicated person to work in the lab or in EPI for food. And the ones in green are the ELC grant, again, which a number of you had been working on. There are also some three programs I mentioned briefly before that are related but have language in them allowing states to apply for food safety. And this shows that 17 states have used preparedness funding, 25 have used prevention public health funding, and 7 Prevent Block to jumpstart some of their programs in food safety. So it's not easy to do that, but that is possible, and states have used that at times when they've had needs. So the range in funding for states last year ranged from $128,000, a small state, up to $3.9 million. Surprise, a large state, but the average is $843,000, and we now have 14 states in the million-dollar club. So the program, which was a ma-and-pa shop, if food, if you combine the different activities, is now becoming a regional distribution center or regionals, and needs to develop methods above and beyond what you'd have as a ma-and-pa store. The average number of programs funded per state is 6 with a range of 2 to 12. So this, Francis talked about sort of tiers, and one of the things now CDC looking at the funded programs is capacity building, is how do we improve, how many people flown with Delta recently? So quite a few. They've added a fourth, class of status, basic status, that basically means it's almost like standby. They can bump you, have a middle seat, not guaranteed. So we sort of see different levels, the coach class, then the economy, comfort, and first, or if you're Olympian, you can think of these as gold, silver, and bronze, and not yet there. So the challenge is, how do we try to improve to make all states perform at a higher level, and CDC as well? And this has been a challenge, and as we heard, the outbreak that enhanced has moved 18 states out of the minimum basic into the coach or economy comfort in the last couple of years. The ELC grant will fund hopefully another 5 to 7 this year and another 5 to 7 next year out of funding from antimicrobial resistance. So we want to continue improving continuous quality improvement in all the states. Some states have more resources, have either more expertise, have developed more to higher priority, have infrastructure, or a champion in their own state that they can do more, but all of us have the same issues and problems with food. So you can't escape that. And how do we get the states that are still in white with up the higher level? And that's the plan, is to increase those over the next couple of years and increase performance of all sites. So just to summarize some of the improvements that have taken place over the past 4 years, partially through the funding, but partially through the interest in people in this room, and that you come to this conference, you submit abstracts and posters. We feel there's better government collaboration on attribution, outbreak investigations, whole genome sequencing. There's multiple now interagency groups that meet regularly. There have been several new programs created. I mentioned a couple on the CDC-supported side, on the Centers of Excellence, OutbreakNet Enhance, but also FDA on their RRTs, rapid response teams in states have also helped. Old programs have expanded, as I mentioned, Food Corps, CaliciNet, Norostat, and there's been increased recognition of multi-state outbreaks, which have increased in number and proportion of the total outbreaks that have been reported, and that's led to more recalls. There's also been improved process metrics, as several of our speakers already demonstrated, for example, in the Food Corps that Francis talked about. That said, there's challenges that still remain. You know best from the audience, state and local capacity has been weakened. There was a loss of 50,000 staff since 2008. We have new, previously unrecognized food items that are causing foodborne illness, partly through the DNA fingerprinting of PFGE and now whole genome sequence, recognizing more exotic foods, even peanut butter, which I grew up on, spices, and now even flour. So think of that when you're eating lunch today. CIDT is threatening the loss of use of cultures that allowed us to make these detections. New resources are needed to implement whole genome sequence. And we have antiquated IT systems that need to be standardized, consolidated, and brought into the 21st century. And we still have solid food programs that need to be better integrated, modernized, and operate more efficiently, like other programs that you probably see at CDC, where you have one application for TB, STD, and immunization. In that regard, the CDC Division of Food, Water, Environmental has actually added some staff. Darren Ogburn, say hello here, is recruited as a public health advisor with expertise and experience in programs, and has been working with several of us on the ELC grant to start moving it in a direction of better integration, reducing the number of individual applications, moving toward a more consolidated budget, and to try to get other activities like that. Okay, so now what's next? Now what? So There's several things we could do. These are just a list of some potential things. You will obviously have your own list. We want to hear what they are. Plan to continue upgrading states and CDC to higher performance levels. Need better integrating and modernizing of CDC program operations. And as I mentioned, starting with the ELC grant, that'll be a new five-year grant after next year. Because of the importance and challenges, we need to prioritize CIDT, whole genome sequence, and AR issues. We need to integrate the myriad of food IT systems into a more unified reporting platform that's bi-directional. And we have to capitalize on state expertise, such as the Centers of Excellence, the regional laboratories, and the RRTs to enhance capacity. And most important, we have to consult with stakeholders to identify opportunities for improvement. And so welcome your thoughts. So what about next year? It's going to be challenging. You know, you've probably heard the proposal for a 17% cut in CDC's budget. What does that mean for food? You know, food has had bipartisan support, and by a miracle, the funding came through this past year. The only thing we were doing was defending a $4 million cut. There was nothing anywhere about a $2 million increase, and miraculously it appeared. So never give up. There's still hope. But don't stay passive either. So, and as you look ahead in terms of the future, we want you to maintain a Lake Wobegon vision where all states are above average and reaching for gold. Thank you. You're from CDC. You can't ask a question. We're out in the state before.
I used to be at a state though, so does that
yes,
count?
Okay. Yes. Well, I was too. I could ask myself my own question.
You pretty much could. Yeah. So this is a softball. I wondered if you might speak a little bit about some of the CARB funding towards some of the COEs to actually work on some One Health projects. I think that's been really excited for me to participate in, and I know it's really been fruitful to have those discussions with our COE partners in the states and even at some of the veterinary universities.
I can't think of anybody better than Megan to talk a little bit about this subject. The concept was that we realized there wasn't going to be a lot of extra funding for the Centers of Excellence. They're way underfunded compared to other CDC Centers of Excellence, which usually around $1 million. And when we started and there was actually no money, we got 11 states to apply with no promise and then a small amount of money, $200,000, but they're around $450,000. So what we started doing was looking for other sources of funding within CDC for supplemental projects, and that's where the CARVR funds thought of something that the Centers of Excellence might have contacts with veterinary schools and might be able to do needs assessments to find out what kind of training is needed and improve an antiquated website that hadn't been touched in 10 years to provide training for veterinarians. And then we were figuring out how we're going to put a scope of work, and Megan came to the rescue. And Megan, why don't you comment a little bit about the potential. So what we see is the Centers of Excellence having the network and perhaps to use some of the things they've done in needs assessments and other areas and putting training materials together to take advantage of that. But does any other points you want to make on it? We think that's fantastic. One Health linking it together with our veterinary partners. And then you're going to tell. So Megan's now wanting to expand this, which is great, to collect surveillance data on basically from veterinarians in terms of illnesses that are occurring and from which can be linked to human illnesses, et cetera, et cetera. Matt.
Dr. Carter, just call another man. Yeah. You got it. It's yours.
Many of you may not know that Dale and I have known each other for more than 30 years. I met him when I was a fourth-year medical student, and he was my resident. And he had did EIS before going back to do his internal medicine residency. So he was different than everybody else, and he talked about big picture. And he was the first person to tell me about the EIS training program. So I thought I might ask you a question. Because we've been doing this for so long, and between us we've investigated many outbreak investigations, but it seems to me that the incidence of foodborne illness has not decreased during our 30 years. And so is it because even with all we're doing, even your Cadillac program, it's not enough? How do we really make it go down?
Well, we could stop eating.
Well, Rob Tuck says that as long as you cook it, you'll be okay. But it really strikes me that we're not dealing with the source. We're dealing with problems at the end of the distribution line. And many of the cases of foodborne illness are sporadic and are not associated with outbreak investigations. So where are we chipping away?
Well, you probably, everybody in the room, I'm sure, has their own thoughts. And undoubtedly, there's a bias in the reporting and better detection methods that we're identifying and actually linking illnesses to food that were previously unrecognized. I mean, that's one thing. So as the actual number, that's a tough thing to do. How do you measure that? We have new detection methods that can find, you know, things we couldn't identify before. And now with these new laboratory methods, you'll be able to do shotgun and find 20-some agents. You're obviously going to detect a lot more, so the number is going to rise. And the culture-independent diagnostic studies that the FoodNet Connecticut and other sites have done have clearly shown that there's an increase in cases being detected. So when do we show successes?
Well, is our food more safe? I mean, you run the food safety program.
Yes. Well, it's is it safe enough? I guess it just takes, you know, if you've ever interviewed or talked with someone who's lost a child, you know, it's really a sad event. So.
But that's still happening. I mean, we still get E. coli 157.
Yeah, but it's happening less often than it used to happen, I guess. But can we measure it?
Yeah.
This is a challenge. So this is a challenge for the next. I look out the crowd and I see this is the next generation. How many of you have been working in the field of food safety less than 5 years? So this is we're going to pass the baton on to you to help solve this question. We're not going to solve this in a short discussion period, but. Yeah,
well,
so we hope that you challenge you to find the answer to Matt's question.
I've been waiting 30 years to ask you that question.
Yeah, 30 years. This was tough. I used to be able to do that as a resident. This year.
And with that, we'll close the session.
All right.
Let's go back to our speaker.